In the far reaches of the galaxy, a civilization is under siege.
We are all that is left.
They've searched the universe for a leader.
Stay tuned for scenes from next week's Galaxy Quest.
Never give up. Never surrender.
He will save us.
What they got.
Never give up and never surrender.
We're struggling TV actors.
You are our last hope.
Where's my limo?
Okie dokie.
And they're about to put on a command performance. 8 million light years away.
We are actors, not astronauts.
You are our protectors.
That was a hell of a thing.
Now,
Laredo, take us out.
You gotta move to the right.
Would you sit parallel? Your ass down? You wanna drive this to...
Acting like heroes.
The whole thing was just a misunderstanding.
May not be enough.
They look like little children. Hi, little guy.
I'm done.
DreamWorks Pictures presents Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, Galaxy Quest.
You're just gonna have to kill it.
Well, go for the mouth, the throat, his vulnerable spots.
It's a rock, it doesn't have any vulnerable spots.
By Grab Thar's Hammer, it's the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and we have a very, very special guest this week to talk about Galaxy Quest from 1999, the sci-fi comedy. Is expert podcaster, co-host of the Fifth Element Podcast, Crystal Beth. Crystal, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Thank you for coming on. I am a big fan of yours. I will just say that. The podcast that I subscribe to, I don't read the show notes to listen. I just listen to whatever the next episode is. And you're on a lot of the minute-by-minute podcasts. And every time you're on one of those shows, I'm like, oh, this is great. Because I always enjoy listening to whether it's Indiana Jones Minute or Star Wars Minute or Star Trek Minute or any of the other minute shows you've been doing. So I'm really excited.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited about this. So
I'm excited to talk about a whole movie.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're actually going to have a whole movie. We're going to have a whole movie to discuss, all 95 minutes of it or whatever, not the minute.
Yeah,
minute, so.
Perfect length.
Yeah, so yeah, this is Galaxy Quest. It's from 1999. It's directed by Dean Parasot. I hope I'm saying that correctly. It stars Tim Allen, the great Sigourney Weaver, the great Alan Rickman, Tony Shalhoub, Sam Rockwell, Daryl Mitchell, Enrico Colatoni, and a lot of others. It's basically the alumni cast of a space opera television series have to play their roles as the real thing when an alien race needs their help. Now, this movie is kind of curious. I saw this in the theater when it came out in 1999, and I remembered thinking, all right, that's pretty good. And that was kind of it. I didn't have a whole huge reaction to it. And then over the years, I've seen how a kind of like cult has built up around this movie to the point where I think I read a couple of years ago that like they polled Star Trek fans of how to rank the Star Trek movies. And for some people, Galaxy Quest made it onto the list.
Heck yeah, it did.
Star Trek movies. And, you know, Star Trek fans are not always the most flexible about what they consider real Trek or whatnot. So that's a real compliment to this movie. So when you mentioned that you wanted to talk about it, I was like, well, here's my chance to rewatch it because I hadn't seen it, you know, in 18 years. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, this will be great. So I'm curious as to, like, what's your history with Galaxy Quest and, of course, with Star Trek because they're inextricably linked.
So I never really watched Star Trek at all. I was so into Star Wars that my brain couldn't wrap around watching Star Trek as well. But I saw Galaxy Quest, not in the theaters, but my dad and I rented it. And it was my favorite thing. It still took me until the new Star Trek movies came out for me to watch Star Trek for the first time. And I actually just watched Wrath of Khan for the first time a year and a half ago.
Wow.
Maybe. But this movie I thought was so good. And I knew, like, being into sci-fi and science fiction, obviously Star Trek is going to filter through everything. So I knew about it, obviously, and I knew references to it. I knew what it was like. I'd seen clips, but I'd never sit down. I've never seen a whole season. I've seen a couple of shows. But nothing crazy, but Galaxy Quest, just from the first time I saw it, every single time I watch it, it gets better.
Interesting.
It's just so funny.
It is a very, you know, it walks a very fine line sort of between, you know, when you first watch it, when I rewatch it again yesterday, I forgot how kind of serious the opening is, which is kind of a nice setup for what you're going to get. But I mean, it really sets up like our cast, which are all kind of these has-been actors, and they really don't like one another. It's got a pretty, I don't want to say dark, that's an overused word, but it's got a pretty serious opening, which I was surprised at. I didn't remember that. I didn't remember it being kind of that heavy. And I sort of appreciated that, of kind of giving you the nitty-gritty of what it might be like to, you know, have been a kind of has-been TV star. That's kind of an interesting angle.
And they, you know, having this movie be one of my favorites of all time, I've done a lot of reading about it and seeing what's happening. And that actually happened to William Shatner, the bathroom scene.
Oh, did it really? Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, he was at a convention. I think it was in like 1986 or something like that, sometime in the 80s, where he was in a bathroom and heard someone talking about him like that. And that has just got to be heartbreaking, especially because, number one, those kids weren't even there for the convention, so they can just shut the heck up. Mm-hmm. But how excited Jason Nasmith is to be talking about it and how much he gives to all the fans, for someone to say anything to take that away from him is infuriating. And I'm really glad that this movie didn't focus on that. He was only worried about it for maybe 5-10 minutes of the movie, which is awesome, because that's not what I want to see.
Yeah, he buys into it. I mean, he's really into it. I mean, part of it is because he's had presumably the best career kind of all of them. He gets to be the leading man. I mean, we have such sympathy for Alan Rickman's character, who has to appear in his makeup, which that's brutal. You know, they actually have to put on that headgear to make convention appearances.
Yeah, and I love that even when he's in his apartment talking to Sigourney Weaver, he still has he never has it off in the whole movie. He still is wearing it when he's at home on the phone.
Oh, that's sad. It's like, it had to be so uncomfortable. I did read a little bit about this movie, that apparently Alan Rickman was not a sci-fi guy. Like, he didn't like the genre at all, which seems, I don't know, shocking a little. He seemed like a, you know, erudite fellow. I think he would be appreciative of different genres. But apparently he liked the screenplay so much that he went for it, even though, you know, it's a very sci-fi movie. And I thought, I mean, I have to wonder, like, he was presumably friends with Sigourney Weaver, and you think Sigourney Weaver would probably be able to vouch for sci-fi as a, you know, perfectly good genre.
Right. And sci-fi is a perfectly good genre. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact that Alan Rickman went into it as an actor that doesn't particularly like sci-fi made it he fit in the role that much better. Not that he couldn't have done a great job if he loved sci-fi, but because he didn't like it and he's in it, he's able to roll his eyes at how silly it is.
Yeah, he does have the kind of disdain, like, oh, he's just so tired. I mean, we get to see him at the Tronic store opening, you know, where he's just so like, oh, God, I have to go through all this again.
By Grabthar's hammer, what a savings.
All right.
I mean, over the years, I've read things about the Star Trek crew, about how, you know, they didn't always get along. I mean, I grew up watching Star Trek. I watched it with my dad in reruns in the 70s. And, you know, so I'm familiar with the kind of relationship that all these actors have had with one another. And it is a little heartbreaking, because when you're a kid, you like to think that these people are just, like, are able to recognize how much joy they give people through what their creation is. And when you see them, when you hear about that they are sad or frustrated or whatever, it is kind of heartbreaking, because you just want to, you know, you got, you're Chekhov, you're Sulu, you should be. And one of the things that I thought was interesting about this movie from a perspective of many years later is, you know, I don't think that the people that are genre, or not, maybe I shouldn't even say genre, but like, I think people nowadays know that there is an audience that loves whatever it is they're doing, and they can connect with that audience. And I don't think you have that notion of being like a has-been anymore. I think it's like you can relate directly with your fans, and kind of live off that in a good way. I don't mean that in a negative way.
Right.
It's like, it's a much more positive view. Well, I heard lots of horror stories about actors in the 60s and 70s that just found themselves bottomed out after their show went off the air and all the residuals dried up. But now we don't have that. You can go to conventions. You can be on Twitter. You can have this wonderful relationship with your fans, which has got to be a much more rewarding experience than what these people have to go through.
All I want in my life is to be cast in something or a part of something that can get me into cons for free on channels and just talk to people about what I want to talk about is literally all I want in my life. And from a young child, I mean, I went to school for theater because I really wanted to be an actor. But as I got older and I started acting in things, I was like, this isn't what I want to do. I want to act in sci-fi things. I want to be that kind of a person that ends up even like a science TV show, something that has a following of nerds, not just, oh, I can be dramatic. I don't want an Oscar. I want to hang out with nerds all the time that think I'm cool. That's all I want.
It's okay. You know her from playing Commander Trongfar. It's Crystal Beth, and you come out. Everybody, yeah.
Hi. I would just cry every day. Yeah. It'd be insane. But it's fun watching this because knowing actors that do not want to do the sort of things I want to do, that do not want to be a part of a science fiction or fantasy or like action adventure type community, if they got pigeonholed into something like this, they would be so depressed. But again, this movie's not about that. It's about them coming together and being proud of what they used to be proud of again, which is this whole movie. I watched it again today because I was like, I'm going to watch it and be fresh. And I still cry at the end of the movie every time, not like sob, but I have goosebumps and my eyes start welling up just because they make it back and their relationships have reformed and came back together. And the whole time you only see Alan Rickman really smile twice in the movie. And when he does, it's so, cause he's got such a stunning smile and he's so good at not smiling. So when he finally does, it melts your heart. And it's just like, oh, he's happy. He's excited to be doing what he's doing. He's been through so much. He said his line for the first time and loved it. I mean, he's said his line all the time, but for the first time saying it and it being real for him when his little friend dies.
Yes. Yeah.
For a spoiler. Hopefully, if anyone's listening to this, they saw the movie already.
I don't think anybody's listening. I wouldn't imagine anyone that listens to the show is very familiar with this movie. Because like I said, this movie really did build up quite a cult following. It really became, you know, it became a beloved thing. Because I think in the beginning, you know, it was like, is this making fun of Trek fans? Is this making fun of Star Trek fans? And then you watch it. No. You've got Justin Long as sort of the number one fan. And,
right.
You know, like, and these kids are all, like, science-minded, bright kids. Yeah, they're nerds, but so what? Who cares? You know,
yeah.
They're good people. They're very highly motivated. They're highly intelligent. And, of course, they help save the day at the end of this movie, which is, you know, which is wonderful. I love the sort of network that they have amongst themselves. They have technology that even I don't have now, like little pop-up screens where they're talking to one another instantly.
Yeah, and this was in 99.
Yeah.
Like, this didn't exist. And this was Justin Long's first movie. He beat out a bunch of people for it, and rightly so. He was perfect. Just awkward enough. And I love when he's like, listen, I've been thinking about what you said. And I know the show is not real. And he's like, it is real. He's like, I knew it. It's like, it makes you feel how you used to feel. Like, I know Star Wars isn't real, but if someone was like, no, it's real, I'd be like, oh, I knew that's a thing that I love.
That's what I wanted to be told.
Right. And it's just joy. And that's what this movie really sits into, is the joy of being a fan of something and also adults getting sick of something they did when they were younger, but then finding the joy in it again themselves. And because it's a bunch of grown-ups doing it and such talented actors playing these grown-ups that are sick of their lives, but then tossed in something much bigger than them, it's awesome to watch selfish people become unselfish, which I think is probably why I cry.
I can make sense. Now, we mentioned Alan Rickman, and we need to talk about Tim Allen. Originally, this movie was being developed by Harold Ramis.
Mm-hmm.
I read that, and then he wanted somebody like Alec Baldwin, a classic leading man, kind of Shatner-y type, and then apparently the studio didn't Baldwin dropped out or something like that, and it moved on to Tim Allen, and that was when Ramis dropped out because he just was like, I'm not interested in working with Tim Allen, so he moved on. What do you think about Tim Allen? I mean, I am not a big fan of him. I think he's good in this movie.
Yes.
I'm trying to imagine what this movie would have been like with an Alec Baldwin type, with someone who is a real straight-ahead leading man.
I don't think it would have been as good, honestly. So Tim Allen was always kind of just meh for me. Like, I didn't think he was that funny. I didn't particularly think he was super funny in Home Improvement. It was the other characters that kind of made him funny. And again, with this movie, it's the other characters that make him funny. Again, where it's how grounded in real life all these characters are, even when they're in space and acting like these crazy, weird characters. It's also grounded that it makes his zany, weird, over the top acting, even though he's not super over the top, but he is very like tongue in cheek when he's like, oh, I guess I better put some pants on. Mm-hmm. When you know it's just Tim Allen saying those lines as opposed to Tim Allen acting. But I think it works. I think it works really well. And my favorite line is one that was obviously all over the trailer when he's like, when Laredo's like, hit him in the vulnerable spot. And he's like, it's a rock. It doesn't have any vulnerable spots. And I don't know who else could have delivered that line just so funny and still kind of pompous, like kind of a little arrogant still.
Yeah, he definitely has that. I mean, I think they channeled that, of course, as Buzz Lightyear, that kind of just real straight ahead confidence, the sort of, like, I mean, it's interesting that when he gets kidnapped by the aliens, he completely buys into it, like how quickly he buys into it. Like he wants to just be, which I have to think is somewhat of a commentary on, of course, William Shatner, who at some point kind of merged with Captain Kirk. You know what I mean? Like the two of them sort of became inseparable after a while. He's just like, well, how much of this is Shatner? How much of this is Kirk? Well, it really doesn't matter anymore. And I tended to think that his character of Nesmith, the way he so quickly buys into the, oh, there's aliens. Oh, I'm the head of the starship. It takes him 5 minutes before and the rest of the crew has to be convinced. But he immediately is like, there's aliens. And he's telling them all, and I've got this communicator and I lost it. He's completely on board. And it's because I think he sees himself as that guy, as the
and
real guy.
They did a really good job of showing that with all the exposition when they're like, he goes and does all this extra thing and how into it he was with the fans and how hurt he was by someone calling him washed up when he's just having fun doing what he's doing. And he's making money. He's being able to live life by doing this.
Got a nice house.
But really nice house compared to where everyone else was living. My goodness.
Yeah.
And I think that they set it up really well for you to 100% believe that it didn't take much. It took him, because he didn't believe it until he was getting sent back to Earth again. And at that point, when you get sent back, you're like, oh my gosh, I need to tell my friends, because he doesn't have any friends. He doesn't do anything with anyone else. These people that are annoyed by him are his only friends. And he's like, come on, do this thing with me. Like, come on, it's going to be so fun. We've been doing this forever. There's aliens. And then you see how cocky he is when these friends first get up there and they're all walking around and he's like got his space legs already. And it's just, he thinks he was made for this.
Right. Yeah. I love how not seriously he takes it all when he's confronted with the alien. He's like, oh, let's just fire some torpedoes. Let's just go ahead and do that. It's just a very kind of, and it is a very Captain Kirk kind of mentality of just like, all right, let's just do this. It's all right. It'll be fine. He just has that real cock of the walk swagger to him. And like I said, it would have been interesting to see Alec Baldwin or somebody more of a leading man. But I said, Tim Allen is, he does a perfectly fine job. I don't mean to do that as a criticism. But
I would be worried that if someone more leading man-ish, I know that Alec Baldwin is very funny, but I worried if it would bring an extra arrogance to it, because Tim Allen is an attractive guy. Like, he is a good-looking average guy, and that suits someone that's full of themselves. But if someone is better-looking and full of themselves, it's harder to relate to that person, because you got to be good looking and have like a fun, welcoming personality, or you got to be ugly with a great personality. Like, there's, you got to even it out. And I worry that because Alec Baldwin does come off as proud of himself. I don't want to say full of himself, but he takes pride in who he is.
He's aware of how good looking he is.
Right. And I would be worried that he would take advantage of that with his acting, or not even that he wouldn't be able to loosen up with the weird lines, because this movie is funny. And I mean, granted, they had written a much darker version of it originally, where it was supposed to be a little bit more like depressing and upsetting, but then they were like, wait, this is funny. And then cut it more funny. And I don't know. I think Tim Allen does a good job. But I agree that he's not one of my favorites. And oh my gosh, when you watch the production videos of it that are the extras on the DVD, mm-hmm. and all the background stuff, he is more full of himself than Jason Nesmith is in the movie.
Oh God, ooh.
he's just so shticky, and Nesmith is shticky because Tim Allen is, but he's like, well, you know, it was fun because Daryl Mitchell and I come from the same school of acting, which is no school. And I was like, oh God. He's like, I think we were really, us and Sam Rockwell, we were really annoying Alan Rickman and Sigourney Weaver with all of our antics. And it's just boy. Like, no, shut up.
I'm betting that Sam Rockwell probably didn't appreciate getting lumped in with those guys, because Rockwell's a real actor. I mean, Rockwell's a great actor. I mean, we got to get to him too, because he's a
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Hello.
Sam Rockwell. We'll skip ahead to him. Sam Rockwell. He's one of those guys. I mean, I would say, you know, not every movie he's in is a great movie, but he is great in every movie.
Yes.
I've yet to see him in a movie where he was not interesting, or at the very least, making the most out of whatever role he's in, whether it's Iron Man 3 or Confessions of a Dangerous Mind or Moon. He is just always entertaining to watch, and I love him in this movie as the red shirt. I mean, who just sort of gloms his way into a regular role. I think he is a rip in this movie.
Yes, and the thing is, and it comes back to what I said before about these actors, where they're acting crazy, but in a grounded reality. Like, their characters are nuts, but because they play them to the height of their intelligence and creatively and smartly, and just, I guess, intelligently would be the smarter way to say that, they are more real and easier to connect to. Every single one of them. And these actors are crazy. Tony Shalhoub and Sam Rockwell are two of my favorite actors of all time. And I loved Sam Rockwell in Choke, too. I thought that a good job. Well, I read the book first, and then I saw the movie, and I was like, because I didn't know how. I was like, how are you going to play this character in this movie? And he did. The movie itself, not as good as the book at all. Okay. But Sam Rockwell did amazing. And same with in Green Mile. You could barely tell it's him.
Oh, that's right. He's so crazy. That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot. Yeah,
plays Wild Bill.
Yeah. Oh, he is always so fun. I love how he's got that kind of sweaty non-confidence. He's got this swagger to him, but he also knows that he's sort of desperately trying to be the hang on to this group. And I mean, I love all the little asides. There's one part where they literally cut into a scene where I think it's Sigourney Weaver's character who says, we have to hurry up before one of those things kills Guy. Like, they already are just assuming that he's going to die because he's the guy that always dies on the TV show. I love the idea that he wants to be there and he wants to be brave, but yet he knows that he's completely out of his depth. I just think he was so perfect for this role. And to me, he's kind of like, other than Sigourney Weaver, who we'll mention, he's probably my favorite performer in this because he's just so fun to watch.
He really is. And I do enjoy every single thing comes out of his mouth is funny. And I can't even try to think right now of probably my favorite line that he has. And I think it's when they're heading down to the planet and he's like, I don't want to be here. I want to go back. And Alan Rickman's like, after all the complaining you did to get here, he was like, that's when I thought that I was going to be the guy that stays back and gets killed on the ship. And now I think I'm the guy that's going to get killed as soon as we step foot on the planet. And he's like grabbing onto Sigourney Weaver's hands and crying into them. And he does just so much hugging. Like at one point he's just looking at Sigourney Weaver's boobs and like looks up at her and just smiles. And it's just like, yeah. And Sigourney Weaver's like, oh gosh, come on. He knows his character, and it makes me happy.
Well, yeah, you mentioned something. You mentioned them. Sigourney Weaver's boobs in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's very, very interesting. I looked this up when I was watching the movie because Sigourney Weaver, one of the greats. I mean, you know, it's like
right.
you put her in a movie. If you put her in a genre movie and you're trying to get the audience on your side, just having her in your movie, you're like 25% of the way there. Already,
yep.
just because of the fact that it's Sigourney, you're like, oh, this is great, Sigourney Weaver. But you know, we all know Hollywood is not particularly kind to actresses once they get past 40. Basically, they get shuffled off into mom roles, you know, and they're sort of used up in a lot of ways, unfortunately. And Sigourney Weaver, very sexy in this movie, very funny in this movie. She was 50 when she made this movie.
God, I would love. I would like to look like that in my 30s, my 20s.
I was when they had like one and yet another scene of her like kind of pulling her top down a little to sort of, you know, thrust at her chest. I thought, how old was she? She was born in 1949, and this movie was made in 1999. I'm like, she's 50 years old. She looks killer in this movie. She is, and on top of it, she is really funny. I mean, again, Sigourney Weaver, it's just like, and you know what's funny? We were talking about how you don't necessarily would have wanted to see Alec Baldwin. It almost works. I think you're right. I almost think it works better that it's Tim Allen because she gets to kind of come to the fore a little more because she's Sigourney Weaver. She's
right.
She can't help but be dominant in any movie she's in, probably because of your history with her. When you saw this movie, had you seen the Aliens movies by this point?
Yeah. Yes, I had.
Oh, okay. So she's Ripley. You know, I mean, she is one of the great sci-fi characters ever. So, I mean, I don't know any man or woman who loves genre movie that doesn't love Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah. And it's fun for her to come from, and she was excited to do this movie too, because she was in the sci-fi movie playing the most badass character, female character ever. I was going to say of that time, but I mean, she's still one of the most,
yeah,
heavy and cool and just strong, and to have her come in and just play this bimbo, very intelligent. The actress herself is very intelligent, but to play this character that's just repeats the computer. So, and I love that she's like, I have one job on this and I know it's dumb, but just let me do it.
Yeah, you get the sense that the character's always Gwen DeMarco. Like, Gwen is capable of a lot more, but she was never asked to do anything more than this. And she's sort of happy with what she's doing. You know, she's like, okay, this is just a good gig for me. But she's very capable. I think my main complaint about this movie would be, I wish she had a little more to do, Sigourney Weaver. Like, she just doesn't get a whole lot. And in fact, there's a deleted scene where she uses her feminine wiles to squash two alien invaders. And
I was glad they took that out.
Why now? Why is that? I was happy because I had wished it was in the movie just because it had given her more to do. But why did you want it removed?
I think that she is almost too sexualized in this movie.
Okay.
Where, yes, we get it. She's like the cute one with the boobs that's doing barely anything. And I like her being more annoyed by it. Like, well, this is what I do. But like, there was a 6-page spread about my boobs.
Right.
And which is an actual thing that really happened.
Right. To Jerry Ryan, right?
To Jerry Ryan. Yeah. Which is crazy. But for her to, I guess in the culture of today, it almost makes it worse because it feels to me like, I know she was using it to get what she wants and to, trick the bad guys into dying, but it was just very like, fine, you know what, here's this thing that you want, here are my boobs. And I think that she's smarter than that. I think that she would be able to outfox them without her boobs. And I'm not saying that using your sexuality as a weapon is a bad thing, because by all means, if you have it and you can use it to your advantage, do it. But I didn't think it fit her character to want to do that because she was so annoyed by it all the time.
I can see that. I can see that. I love her reaction when they get to the chompers. And
yeah, well, this was a bad episode.
She's just like, you know, and in fact, you mentioned that this was supposedly originally like a harder edge movie. You see her saying the F word in that scene, and then they redub it. They dub it in, I forget what they dub it to, but it's like, you've got to be, I think she's like, Yeah, screw this.
You can screw that.
Yeah, you can clearly see her using the F word. But that is a great reaction that she has. I'm just like, oh, she's just so tired. Like, come on. Really? You know, like, this is the way.
And I do
love that set piece, the chompers thing of, you know, the whole, why would you put this in here? This has no narrative purpose.
Yeah, she has a lot of lines about it, too. Like, she talks for a long time about how much she hates the chompers. And then she's like, when they finally get through and they have to jump through, like, fire for no reason, she's like, whoever wrote this episode should die! Oh, it's so funny. And she, I keep thinking about it. And I'm glad they took that out. And if anyone is wondering, just YouTube it or Google it or watch it on the DVD or something so you can see it and, you know, develop your own point of view and then tell us what you think.
Yeah.
Because I'm interested to know. But I'm glad that you have a different take on it.
I agree with you about the way it was used. Because it did remind me a little of, like, the scene from, like, Adrienne Barbeau used to just pull her zipper down in the Cannonball Run movie when I was like, okay, like, this is just about her chest. But I was happy because I just wanted to give her more to do, you know?
I just
wanted Sigourney Weaver to have more to do because I love Sigourney Weaver. I mean, when Sigourney Weaver shows up at the end of, spoiler alert, Cabin in the Woods, you know, I'm just like, oh, it's Sigourney Weaver. Great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I grew up on the Aliens movies, you know? I love those movies, and I loved her as Ripley, and it's just like, I loved her in Ghostbusters. I mean, it's funny, Sigourney Weaver is great at comedy, but she doesn't get a lot of comedy parts to do. I don't know how much more. I mean, she's hilarious in Ghostbusters. She's great in this. She's great in Working Girl. I don't know, like, I don't know why Hollywood has such a tough time finding her comedies to do, because she's got a great affinity for it.
She does. She's very funny. And I think I've said it about 6 times now. It's because she finds her characters grounded in reality. She's a good actress. She makes them real. And then things that happen are funny because it's a real thing that's happening to them. Because when people try to be funny, Tim Allen, sometimes it doesn't hit. But if you play your character real, I mean, this is an improv training. The first thing they tell you when you start classes is don't try to be funny. Let real life happen because that's funny. And I mean, people can try to be funny and it works. But some of my best scenes have been ones where my coaches and teachers have been like, this is going to be a dramatic scene. And then something happens that's hilarious. I can't think of an example. It's so hard to think of a comedy example. But like, say you're just in a fight with someone and you're getting ready to break up. And you're like in all these arguments. And then someone in the weirdest way asks like, well, who gets the TV or something? And it just happens to hit it the right way. Or people are like, or who's going to get the framed packet of Taco Bell hot sauces or something like that, where that ends up being really funny, but it wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think that Sigourney Weaver being funny, or her comedic timing and comedic technique, is because she's so good at being real.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about that when you're saying that about the actors that play the aliens, with Enrico Colatoni and Missy Pyle. Like, they are, I mean, obviously with the way they talk with that funny voice, like, they have that funny voice, but they themselves are not trying to be funny.
Right.
And they have to play it really straight ahead, because if, like you just said, if they start winking a little at the audience, then it's deathly unfunny. But because they are so unaware of how weird they seem when they show up at Nesmith's house, and the way they all line up, like they bunch up together, and all lean forward, like we're laughing at them because they're funny, but they don't know they're funny, and it would be horrible if they were like wacky. Because it wouldn't work, and then the story isn't. And there's the moments where we see some of their fellow aliens. I forget the name of the species, but like when we see them in that room and they're being thrown around and they're like dying, like,
yes,
that actually has some emotional heft to it because we've taken them seriously. They're not just funny. They're not just cartoon characters. These are, I mean, they seem funny, but they're real. And so when they start dying, it's you're like, oh, this is actually pretty upsetting.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And they're Thermians, which is just Thermians, a fun name to say. It's also Rainn Wilson and Missy Pyle's first acting gigs as well.
Oh, right. That's right. Rainn Wilson is in this. That's right.
Yeah. And there's one part there's one part specifically that I was thinking of when you were like, these characters need to play the aliens need to play themselves so smartly. There was a part where I think it's when, Quellic and Dr. Lazarus are walking through the hallway and Quellic starts saying one of Dr. Lazarus' lines, and he's like, don't do it. Right before that dialogue starts, one of the Thermians comes around the corner, and he's in a rush, but he's doing like these almost high-legged run where he's like pretty much bringing his knees up to his hands that are straight out. So he's doing almost like a goose step, but like a really exaggerated run. And in anything else, that would stick out like crazy and look silly. But because all of the aliens had been so real about it, that it was just like, oh, that one's in a rush.
Right. Yeah. They're that's who they are. They're not trying to be funny. And so we have to adjust to how they act. They seem funny to us, but it does seem real. And I think that extends to the effects too. Like, the effects in this movie are pretty good. Like, they hold up. I mean, it's you know, it's sort of like Shaun of the Dead, where it's like Shaun of the Dead is a zombie movie with comedy in it, but it's a real zombie movie. And
right.
this movie works pretty much as a Star Trek movie with the comedy laid in, but it's not any less serious than Star Trek IV.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's got just as much, you know, that movie has just as much comedy. So it plays it pretty straight. And like I said, that was the thing that I enjoyed relearning about this movie, because my memory of it was that it was really silly. And
yes, and
that was why I was like, oh, okay. And when you said you wanted to watch, I was like, well, I'm always up to rewatching something, because, you know, you change over time. You know, movies stay the same, but you change and your reaction
right.
to them changes. And so when
and
I
it gets better.
Yeah, like I said, I enjoyed it a lot more the second time around, and I was able to appreciate things a little differently. And maybe, you know, when I saw it in 1999, maybe I didn't have quite as much sense of humor about my nerddom as I do now. You know, maybe I was a little more like, oh, okay, you know, whatever, because it was a different time then. You know, in 1999, I was a nerd, but the nerds hadn't taken over yet.
Right.
So I was
actually like a closet nerd at some point, yeah, where you're like, I love all these things, but I can't be too crazy.
I never would have known someone like you in 1999.
Right. Exactly. And now I know all of the people. It's crazy how it stinks, because I grew up very secluded from people because I preferred to watch these movies and talk about them and pretend to be them and write fan fiction about them. And now it's so celebrated that I'm happy about it, but I also get really upset because I'm like, gosh, I could have been so cool. And I'm not. But what you were saying about it looking good, I mean, they had Industrial Light and Sound do all the effects, and they had Oscar-winning special effects designers like Stan Winston. He did all the makeup effects and costumes, puppet sculptures. There we go.
Okay.
I was trying to say both words at the same time. Where they just had such a good group, and they took such care of what they were doing, and it shows. Everything. They worked so hard, and they got so many good people in it that it's perfect. Like, I can't think of anything in this movie that I would like to see done better.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I like the transporter effects where they put the kind of goo over them and shoot them across space, and the aliens they take on are good. I mean, the scene where Tony Shalhoub's character Fred starts making out with Lalari, and we see Lariari and like her tentacles start shooting up over him.
And he's like, oh, that's not right.
Yeah, he's into it. I love that Fred is into it. he's very open-minded.
He is, and I love that Fred doesn't have a problem with the transporting system. Mm-hmm. He comes out of the goo last and looks at everyone. He's like, wow, that was a thing. and then turns and looks at everyone and is like, what's wrong with them?
Yeah. Yeah, he's very – I get the feeling he's kind of the if you have the parallels, he's kind of the George Takei of this. Like, he seems the ambassador for the most of this kind of thing. I mean, they don't track exactly right because, I mean, clearly Alan Rickman is supposed to be Leonard Nimoy. But Leonard Nimoy seemed like have a much less bitter life than Alex Danes. Alex Danes seems really miserable, but Leonard Nimoy seemed to really enjoy his life and enjoy being Spock and things like that. So they're not one for one parallels. But I sort of picture that if Galaxy Quest was a real show, Fred Kwan would be the George Takei. He'd be the one with the Twitter following, you know, yeah, and be sort of this ambassador for people and sort of a progressive voice and things like that. That's sort of the read I got from him.
And he's so Tony Shalhoub is so good at characters that, and he's a great actor. And it's like subtle things where he's walking around under his breath. You can hear him be like, wow, these floors are so clean. Oh, this is such a sterile environment. And it's just those little tiny things. Or when people would say his character's name, he'd automatically squint his eyes because he was supposed to look Asian and he wasn't. But he doesn't do it all the time. Obviously, it's only when they reference his character when he's supposed to be doing it. And then he's like, oh, right. And he squints his eyes. And he feels like he's the subtle rock of the group where you don't expect him to be the rock, but he really does hold everyone together. And having him be so nervous about everything and then kind of become the hero because he saves Jason and gets the girl and just seems like he's high. Like when they're going to get the beryllium spear, he brought snacks. He has a bag full of snacks that he brings with him and he carries around in his mouth when they're pushing the sphere. Like he never drops his snack. And that's funny when Sam Rockwell looks at him and is like, are you high? And he never acknowledges it, but he's high in that movie, whole thing. And it's really funny.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the sphere. That's another really nice effect. Like, there's some, like, as I'm rolling it back in my head, like the whole Rockman scene. Like,
yes.
That's a terrific effect. I mean, I know that was supposedly a gloss on the fact that they were supposed to be a Rockman in Star Trek V and they couldn't afford it. So that's why there's a Rockman in this movie. And it's like,
oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, this Rockman, that's a great, like, that would hold up in a straight ahead sci-fi movie. That whole Rockman sequence.
Yeah.
It's really, really well done. I love the fact that they had the sort of money to do it. And it's interesting that, you know, this movie was a pretty moderate success when it came out. I think it made around $70 or $80 million, which is a good amount of money, not a ton. I think it had the unfortunate timing of coming out in between Star Trek Insurrection and Star Trek Nemesis, and I think that was probably the low point for the Star Trek franchise. Well, maybe right after Nemesis was really the low point for the Star Trek, but you know, it's like maybe people were kind of like, I'm not that thrilled with regular Star Trek, I don't need a Star Trek parody. But it's, you know, I mean, thankfully for home video, people get to find things now, and now it's sort of become, you know, an accepted part. And I went and found a bunch of quotes from Trek people about, like, what they think of the movie, and apparently Patrick Stewart was initially like, I don't want to see this, and it was Jonathan Frakes, who, you know, we all know has got a great sense of humor, apparently was the one that told Patrick Stewart, no, go see it. You'll love it, go see it.
That's awesome. I honestly, I don't know anyone. I have not met a person who, when they see this movie, didn't like it. Mm-hmm. I've met people that were like, yeah, it's good, but not anyone that just straight up didn't like it. I have a friend who just a year ago watched the Star Wars for the first time.
Wow.
But my best friend, let me just elaborate on that. My best friend in all the world just saw Star Wars for the first time last year. We've been friends for 15 years. And because I never wanted to push it on her. The worst thing you can do is push something you love on someone because then they'll hate it.
Right,
so I treated her like a 5-year-old. I had to like mold her into who I wanted her to be and like figure out how I could get her to see it and enjoy it. And the whole time she's like asking questions. I couldn't believe how clueless she was about who these people were. But this friend that doesn't see or watch a lot of sci-fi loves Galaxy Quest. Hmm. She thinks it is the funniest, and she doesn't have anything to do with science fiction or fantasy. She likes some stuff, but she's more of a nonfiction love story something with like substance. I used air quotes because I think this has substance, but who am I? But this is a movie that I think people can understand because it's very human. It's very fun. And even if you don't know sci-fi, again, I don't know anything, or I didn't know anything about Star Trek, and I still loved it just because you can relate to everything and everyone in it. It's really quite beautiful. And when I was going crazy saying it was a perfect movie, I don't mean perfect like Oscar winner, should be at the top of everyone's
face. Yeah.
For what it is, it's perfect.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm a big subscriber to that, of movies that, you know, for what they are trying to do, are perfect. They're not, it's not, not everything has to be Lawrence of Arabia, these massive epics. I just talked on the show a couple of episodes ago about, there's an Albert Brooks movie, a comedy called Modern Romance, and I call that movie a masterpiece because I think it is. I think it's literally a perfect comedy for what it's trying to do. But yeah, it's not Star Wars. It's not Wizard of Oz. It's not Casablanca. It's not to that level.
Right. It's not Citizen Kane. It doesn't make you fall asleep.
Yeah. hey, now come on.
Hey, I like Citizen Kane. Yeah. I think it's actually, besides it being revolutionary in the film world, it's actually a good movie.
Citizen Kane is one of those movies, like you just talked about, don't force things on people. I almost hate telling people to watch it because it makes it sound like homework, and I hate that. I love that movie backwards and forwards, and I think it's massively entertaining, but so many people go to it like, oh, I guess I gotta watch it. And you don't, you know, you go into anything with you gotta watch it, then you're behind the eight ball kind of movie. And it's meant to be.
I agree.
That's really interesting that your friend didn't have a conception of Star Trek and you didn't have much of one, and that you liked this anyway. Because like I said, this movie has so many secret handshakes for Star Trek fans that you get more out of it, but it's interesting that you would like it anyway, and it works for you when even though you don't know all that stuff. That's a mark of a really broad based kind of movie that works for all kinds of different people, because it's not a movie that you have to know all the ins and outs of Star Trek to appreciate.
Yeah, it's for everyone. Like I said, it's the human stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Well, I think that's going to do it for Galaxy Quest. I have one other question I do want to ask you, because I listened to Fifth Element. And,
thank you.
And you, even though I'm not huge on that movie, but I like the show, so I listened to Fifth Element. And you are a big admirer of you're a big admirer of men's thighs. You've talked about it on the show numerous times. That is something that you pay attention to. Is there any good thigh work in this movie? Is there any actor that you're like, those are some nice thighs you got going on here?
Tim Allen, I'm not like a huge chest kind of girl, but his chest to his hips, very nice. It's very nice, but there's no, all their suits are too loose for the thighs. So unfortunately, no, but it's always a surprise when Tim Allen takes off his shirt in this, 'cause he's got that very masculine body where it's strong, but it's not ripped, because there's nothing. I do not like six packs. I do not like pecs. I don't think it's attractive. I think they need to eat something. But I love there's like the perfect amount of hair, the perfect amount of muscle. He's still kind of thick. He could toss you around if he wanted to, but that's really the only body part you really get to see. Okay. It's a shame. This movie would actually be perfect if there were more thighs. Oh, wait, you know, you do see him when he's in his underwear.
Oh, that's right. That's true. He's walking around with his pants on. That's true. Okay.
Yeah, and they're obviously, if I forgot about that, nothing to write home about. Nothing to write home to mom about.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. When I heard you mention that on the show, I was like, I gotta ask her about the thigh work in this movie.
Oh, what a good question.
And we're gonna stop here, because can't top that. So, well, thank you so much for doing this. Like I said, I'm just a really big fan of yours. It sounds weird to say, because podcasters, it's kind of a weird level of fame that goes on, but you've been on so many of the Movie by Minute shows, and it's you're just really fun to listen to, and I'm always delighted when you are a guest. So I'm really very proud of my show that you could be on, and you would deem to be on it. I'm really, really happy about this. So thank you.
You're making me blush. I don't know how it is. Stop it.
Well, that's great.
Talk about spaceships.
All right, we'll talk about spaceships. All right, we'll end it here. So where can people find you on the internets?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at The Crystal Beth, and you can listen to my podcasts. I have one called The Fifth Element, and that's about The Fifth Element. And I have one called Unlimited Lives Radio, and that's about video games. Both of those are on iTunes. And www.thefifthelementit.com is where you can go to listen to more of those episodes of that movie, because I love it.
I assume you're going to be seeing it on the big screen when it's for the when it's out for the 20th anniversary?
Yep, saw it yesterday.
Oh, wow. Oh, geez. Oh, it's, I guess it's playing right now as we're talking, isn't it? Right? It's this week. Isn't that what's
going on?
Oh, very cool. That's got to be very exciting to see that.
It was my Mother's Day present to me, but not being a mother.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, I love it. That's great. That's great. So, oh, well, very cool. Very, very cool. As always with our show, of course, you can find all the back episodes and all our other great shows over on our network site, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. And we can talk about movies and stuff over on Twitter, which is at filmandwaterpod. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Crystal Beth, thank you once again for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was an absolute pleasure. I loved this. Talking about movies is my favorite.
Very cool. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And until next week, that's a wrap.
All right, Brandon, we're across. Now what?
You want to take a left and then just straight on through the chompers.
The chompers? Well, screw that.
How are we supposed to get through this?
Hollister, do you have the sequence yet?
Okay. The sequence is... 2-2-4-2-3
What is this thing? I mean, there's no useful purpose for there to be a bunch of choppy, crushy things in the middle of a hallway. We have to do this! It makes no logical sense! Why is it here?
Because it's on the television show!
Well, forget it!